I wanted to proceed the sermon today with a mind-blowing video about the reality around us and within us. The amazing thing is that there are so many mind-blowing videos about the reality that we live in. Our children now are exposed to so many wonderful things. I'm sure there's a certain amount of overload. A few weeks ago, I showed you a video on the surface of the sun, made from images from the SOHO satellite. I thought that was pretty spectacular. I could have showed you visualizations of the universe on its smallest scale, at the quantum level, where energy and matter appear and disappear from nothing. I could have gone to the other end of the spectrum to show you the structure of the universe in its grandest scales imaginable, with structures so large that light literally takes billions of years to traverse them. Well, from all these possibilities, I've chosen an animation of something called a motor protein. There are millions of these tiny animated objects working within each of the trillions of cells within your body at this very moment, and without which you would die in seconds. The video is only a minute long, so I want to prepare you for what you'll see. It's a very clever and well-done animation. The things depicted are too small to be seen in this kind of detail with even the most powerful microscope. The video begins with the camera zooming in on four seeds germinating in a petri dish in a lab. The camera then zooms in further on a tiny rootlet, which is really literally one cell of the plant. And within that cell are tiny molecular ropes called microtubules that stretch from one part of the cell to another. And walking along those microtubules are tiny motor proteins with 2 feet that step their way along those microtubules. The job of these proteins is to pick up material in one part of the cell and deliver it to another part of the cell. And without them, the cell would die. I did not make this up. But when I encountered these videos, I was so astonished that I had to ask Ian Meinertzog, a friend of the congregation, and a neuroanatomist and cell biologist, if this was reality. He assured me that it was, and that some of the neurological diseases that plague humanity are the result of failures of this very mechanism. Tangles in these microtubules that confound the motor proteins, for example, and prevent them from making their deliveries. These microtubules that will look big in the picture I'm going to show you are about 25 nanometers in diameter. And that may not mean a lot to you, and I don't know how to convey a sense of scale very well, but if the world were scaled up so that these little mobile proteins, which kind of look human-like, if they were the size of a human, then a human being would be 8,000 kilometers tall. Give you an idea of their size. They're too small to be accurately seen by a microscope. That's amazing, I heard someone say. It's a wonder. It's incredible. Mind-blowing, I think. There's a lot to grasp there, and I may be throwing too much at you at one time for all of this to make sense. In fact, I'm going to throw a lot at you in the next 15 minutes or so. It's the end of the year, and I get to disgorge all the things that I wanted to say all year long. These are actually very profound things for me, very close to my understanding of my theology and my understanding of why I'm in ministry. I find it incredible and wonderful to think that our lives are made possible by trillions and trillions of tiny motor proteins walking down microtubules like construction workers hauling bricks, all within the cells of our bodies, at this very moment and in every moment of our life. In fact, inside every cell, every living cell. The underlying premise for my sermon this morning is that in order to live a good life, we have to cultivate a sense of wonder and awe for the nature of the reality that we live in. Reality is nothing to be taken for granted. It's something worthy of our intense curiosity. And such curiosity, if properly cultivated, will lead to a sense of humility. Humility based on the realization that we're part of something much bigger than we can imagine. I know that as I begin this sermon, I will not convince everyone of my underlying thesis. Not everyone experiences the universe in the same way. But it is a matter of Unitarian Universalist faith that we can learn from each other's perspectives, and that the more that we can see the world through another's eyes, the more we can grow. I mentioned that I had a discussion with Professor Ian Meinertzhagen about these little motor proteins. He seemed at first to be delighted, as delighted with the thought of these little critters pulling components along microtubules within the cell, as excited about it as I was. But when I pressed him about how this affected his view of the universe, he responded, "Well, once you understand the mechanism, then the phenomenon loses its mystery." And I could have showed you another little clip that explains the mechanism. You know, what's going on? Molecules are being absorbed and other molecules are being let go, and that's why this little foot moves forward, and it's all explainable. Well, there are at least two hymns in our hymnal that provide different perspectives on sustaining our sense of mystery in the face of knowledge. I want to digress here for a moment and just tell you, when I was studying for the ministry in Atlanta, Georgia, at a Methodist seminary and a secular school of Emory University, I took a class in church music, and the professor asked us all to bring our hymnals from our different backgrounds, and most of the people that were there were from traditional mainline Christian denominations. I brought our Unitarian hymnal, and the professor was blown away. He'd never actually seen our hymnal before, but he was amazed with how much theology was in it, how closely our hymns reflected very profound thinking about what we claim to believe. And I was very proud at that moment to be a Unitarian. Our hymnal is, in fact, a treasure. It's a good idea to take one home once in a while and just read it. It's a thing to do over the holidays. So I'll read the entire second verse of hymn number 345 in the hymnal. The verse reads, "With wider view come loftier goal, with fuller light more good to see, with freedom truer self-control, with knowledge deeper reverence be." With knowledge deeper reverence be. That's what I feel when I see those little guys. We can understand the mechanism, but that does not necessarily mean that you lose your sense of reverence or mystery. Another quote from hymn number 339, which is from a poem written by Arthur Noyes. "Knowledge, they say, drives wonder from the world. They say it still, though all the dust ablaze with marvels at their feet, while Newton's laws foretell that knowledge one day shall be song. We seem like children wandering on the shore, gathering pebbles colored by the waves, while the great sea of truth from sky to sky stretches before us, boundless and unexplored." That last hymn, a poem by Arthur Noyes, captures the reality that we really don't know what reality is. Instead, we're gathering colored pebbles on the shore of a vast, unexplored sea of reality. At one time, reality was that things fell to earth or rose in the air because that was their nature, to find their apparent place in the order of the universe. The reality was that the diversity of life on planet Earth was the result of the direct intervention of a God who created each unique species. And the universe itself was a stable and unchanging place, same now as it always had been. Reality today is none of those things. That's not to say that we're not making progress in understanding what is real, only to say that we surely have not reached a point where we can define reality in its entirety. So my selection for a sermon, and I do this to get it in time for the newsletter, and I always have grandiose ideas when I'm doing this, and I'll figure out later the details, but I have a topic at least. So when I was doing this last month, I promised you 10 things you didn't know about reality. I thought at the time it was going to be easy. What was I thinking? As I worked on this late last night, I was, oh my goodness, what have I done? First problem is that a UU congregation is a very well-read group of people, and I cannot hope to tell you 10 things about reality that you didn't already know. This is way more than I should have committed to, and as I worked on the sermon, I considered changing the title to 2 or 3 things you might not fully appreciate about reality. Well, it's too late for that now, I'm afraid. So I beg your indulgence, and I ask for the next portion of the sermon, you reflect on ideas that you may already know, but you may not think about a lot. I've tried to be careful in stating these facts about reality. In some cases, the effects that I'm going to talk about are quite specific and quite limited, and you got to take care not to interpret them and generalize them and take them out of their practical applications. So let me begin at the beginning, with the Big Bang. Fact number one. The first fact I want to present is something that I've talked about from this pulpit before. It really is part of my theological bedrock. It's generally accepted by cosmologists now, and only recently, that our universe is in fact infinite. There is a limit to how far we can see, but that's related to the time it takes light to travel across the universe to our eyes. In reality, the reality is that the universe continues in all directions infinitely, galaxy after galaxy. That leads to astounding conclusions. For everything that can happen in an infinite universe, including multiple Earths, does happen an infinite number of times. I'm not going to dwell on any of these very long, because all 10 of them would keep us here all day. So, fact number two. Those same cosmologists struggle to explain why our universe is finely tuned to support life. The conclusion from this observation, and from other observations about the nature of matter, is that our finite universe, our infinite universe, is only one of a number of infinite universes. Fact number three. The universe is not ultimately defined by independent accumulations of matter or energy, the things we think make the world real. The universe is rather the manifestation of an underlying field that produces the matter and the energy that we perceive. In this way, everything that we can detect in the universe is connected as part of an underlying quantum field. And that's the true reality. As Niels Bohr, the great physicist who died in 1964, said, everything that we call real is made up of things that we cannot possibly regard as real. Fact number four, briefly stated, we don't have a clue about the origin or the nature of consciousness. It remains one of the most puzzling facts of reality. Fact number five, we don't understand the origin or the nature of life. A dead cell and a live cell have exactly the same components, but they are mysteriously different. Fact number six, we don't understand our own perception of time. Time we know now is an other dimension in the space-time continuum that is the universe. But our progression, our perceived progression through time, appears to be an illusion of our consciousness. Past, present, and future somehow coexist. We can conduct experiments on real particles that appear to affect the past history of the particle. Fact number seven, we don't understand the nature of free will, the thing that we think makes us most human. There's no known mechanism to explain free will. And as such, some have come to conclude that free will itself is an illusion. There is, in fact, considerable evidence that what we think of as a conscious decision is often the result of an unconscious process that preceded our awareness of it. When I decide to raise my hand, if they were studying my brain, they would see that I actually made that decision before I decided to make that decision. Fact number 8. The universe is not local. By that we mean that events anywhere in the universe can have an effect on other events anywhere in the universe without any physical connection between the two events, and they can happen, this interaction can happen instantaneously. Fact number 9. While physicists claim to be working on a grand unified theory that would state the laws of nature that govern everything in the universe, they still have nothing to say about life or consciousness. And finally, fact number 10. There's no explaining why any of this should exist, let alone this exquisite universe that our physicists try to explain with the theory of everything. See, the goal of the physicists, although they claim to be explaining the universe, is not to explain anything. It's to uncover the natural laws that apparently existed before there was anything, and to show how these laws led to the universe that we inhabit. But science will always be at a loss to explain why there should be such laws, why there should be anything. So I come to the end of my list, a rather amazing top 10 list for 2015, I think. To accept this list is to accept our limitations. Our scientists are now facing the limits of the human ability to interact and comprehend this stunning universe. The reality of matter and nature is, on the largest scale, it extends to infinity and beyond. The moment of creation and what happened before the moment of creation lies beyond any foreseeable human capacity to understand, except as some kind of mathematical construct. On the smallest scales, everything that is material disappears into the realm of pure and obscure mathematics. What we think of real is on examination composed of things that we cannot possibly acknowledge as real. Time becomes a mathematical concept. It is a theory that can be manipulated forward and backward, but on a practical level remains an impenetrable mystery. Life remains beyond our ability to create. See, its complexity within even the most primitive cells remains beyond our ability to duplicate. Consider those tiny motor protons. Consciousness, free will, and all the associated aspects of human psychology and sociology remain beyond our grasp to dissect and analyze at a basic level. If our exploration of the physical universe is any guide, all aspects of a reality may well expand in complexity and grandeur to the level where all hope of comprehension on a human scale will vanish. And finally, the big question. Why should any of this stunning, mind-numbing universe exist at all? That question, the ultimate religious question, remains totally impenetrable. Our realization that the world around us is much stranger than we can ever imagine ought to be a wake-up call. Acknowledging that we really know nothing about the nature of our own consciousness, about the source of our free will, about the genesis of life, about the stunning recognitions of the majesty of the universe and our place in it. This brings me to my conclusion about the role of humility in the good life. Humility is not something that Unitarian Universalists take too easily. Historically, we cherish reason above all else, and we are very reluctant to accept that there are things beyond human comprehension. We sometimes tend to think that we understand reality better than other faith traditions. Granted, there are some good reasons for our suspicion about anyone preaching humility. We've seen that concept abused and used to keep the poor and the oppressed in their place, been told to wait until their time comes. In the name of humility, we've seen women kept in their place. Women should be humble, do their jobs. Our own Christian heritage taught the depraved nature of humanity and the need for salvation and redemption granted by a capricious and all-powerful God who could choose to condemn us to eternal hell if we failed. On the other hand, our faith in the celebration of human diversity is based upon knowledge that our own view is limited and our truth is not the whole truth, that our perspective results from our environment, and that perspective colors all of our perceptions. This is the good news of Unitarian Universalism. It's not that our sins can be redeemed, it's that our vision can be renewed. Forget about seeing the world in a static sense with fixed answers to life's questions, and instead open our eyes to life's stunning expansiveness. And start by realizing how little we really know and ever will know about reality. Here is the key to happiness. The realization that we are not the most powerful things in the universe. It's ultimately a source of a sense of humility, and that can lead to peace and acceptance that's part of living a good life. Well, there you have it. The last sermon for 2015. I hope you find something to ponder in it, and that it will keep you questioning your place in the universe well into 2016. May it be so. Amen.